The idea of scattered minds has a different resonance for me these days. My mother, who is going to be 90 years old next month, now lives in an assisted living facility, and while she's okay, I've met quite a few of the other residents there, and most people of that age have one degree or other of memory loss and so on. So thinking about those folks and that period of our lives, which I guess is common for all of us, came this poem called Backdrop. You can still find them here and there, the old photographs in which you posed beside gladioli, or in the sun by the hood of someone's car, or the one with the pineapple, or the dog you never liked but fed anyway from the white bowl with a chipped rim. Poses to show you were happy, years later when no one remembers, not even you, the dog's name, or what became of the glads. It was all monochrome then, sepia, some of it. Pictures rusted ahead of their time, or faded from lying flat in albums among dates you never thought to record. Life moving forward like that, the heart pumping, the blood within. As it moves still, though harder to grasp, the wind out there, the beating within, the names of things slipping away. Remember that fruit, the one with the spikes? What was it for? It came from somewhere. We took a picture and I sent it to my mother. I wonder what happened to it, that fruit. Years before that, you lean against a white building in July, a brisk wind blowing your skirt against your knees. The camera doesn't register color, but you remember red cotton, the chafe of a hem on your knee. You smile at the lens despite the wind, want to look happy. The shutter clicks, and you were. When I was a kid growing up in southern Ontario, of course, we, like everybody else and like all of you, had a hot water heater in the basement so that we had constant hot water. And so ever since I remember, I mean, what you do every day is you have either a bath or a shower. But in my parents' generation, and that was not the case. And so people at an earlier time didn't have the luxury of endless hot water. And so when you washed, you had to heat water on a stove in some kind of container. And therefore, you only washed those bits of you that really needed washing. And for my father and many men of his generation, that typically was your feet, because you spent the whole day on your feet, either as a farm worker, a laborer, a soldier. And so even many years after we were in this country and we had lots of hot water, my father would typically at the end of the day come home and have a foot bath. He'd get this basin of water and put his feet into it. I actually tried it a few times and it's really, really nice. I mean, I love showers, but there's something about your feet in hot water. Nevertheless, the idea of a foot bath for me conjures up that earlier period, the middle of the 20th century and prior to that. And since it was my father who I saw having foot baths, and he was the one who told me endless stories about the war, about the Depression, somehow the idea of a foot bath, nice though it is, for me has connotations of a fairly dark historical period. This poem is called Fußbad, and the reason it's in German rather than in English is that a friend of mine who is German told me that in German you use the word Fußbad also to describe the little bit of tea that ends up in the saucer when you have a cup and saucer and you have a drink and you spill it and the saucer goes back and it sits. And somebody told me actually in Fredericton the other day is that it's the same in French, it's bain de pied. So there is that extra meaning of... So anyway, that's enough background for you. Fußbad. Not derivatively, Not a little slosh of tea in a saucer, but the thing itself. A ration of heat and comfort steaming within the circumference of necessity. A tin basin, a room with a stove, a ewer. But what can we hope such water will wash away? The grim nostalgia of marching, cold Novembers of ill-fitting boots, factories and trains in the night, rifle butts, turnips frozen to pitchforks in an empty field. No warmth in such a world, but blunt utility. Whatever three lumps of coal and a handful of kindling afford. A bivouac at best, the briefest halt. Gaunt ankles stuck like stubble in a circle of tin. Still, we seek solace where we can, at the edges of night among loops of barbed wire and the smoke of chimneys where the rout continues. Regiments of plumbers herd us toward the taps, but we insist on this moment. 2 feet on chipped enamel, a handle heavy in your hand, the last water on earth ready to pour, scalding. Sometime last year, we had some problem with mice in our house, so I went to the hardware store to buy a mouse trap, and there were a number of different options. So I chose an old-fashioned kind, the little wooden square with the spring on it. And when I got home, I looked at the till receipt that came from the hardware store, and the item, it was listed as trap, mouse, wood. And I thought, why don't they just call it a wooden mouse trap? But they didn't, and so here's a poem called Trap, Mouse, Wood. Which you have chosen over trap, better improved, because you believe in the old ways, even in death. Wood, spring, a metal flap for cheese, a bent wire that just barely holds the trap set. No safety catch, no escape clause, no, are you sure you want to delete this file? Only a delicate balance you hold in your fingers, like the final jack or nine of spades, ready for the peak of a life's perfect pagoda. You wait at night for the scurry of feet along a baseboard, till the trap snaps and leaves a body for the morning light. Rigid on its wooden slab, head caught in the jaws of a crimson V. Victor brand, someone has foreseen, unimproved. So I'd like to read the title poem, The Glassblowers, partly because this afternoon Katya and I went up to St. Joseph's Oratory, where I'd never been before, and had some very interesting conversations about, we'd both been brought up as Catholics in our youth and are no longer. So we had an interesting conversation about the purposes of religious faith and what happens when you leave that behind. So this poem, The Glassblowers, it comes from when I was 5 or 6 years old. In Budapest, my father would take me for walks through the city and show me things. And on one occasion, we came across a building that in its basement, and you could look in through some windows, had the workshop of some glass blowers. And strangely enough, even though this was Stalinist Eastern Europe, what they were making was Christmas tree ornaments. And we looked through this window for a while, and it was absolutely fascinating to see. Well, it still is, but certainly for a child, to see glass blowers blowing and with this flame underneath it, and out came these wonderful Christmas tree ornaments. I found out years later that once the Christmas tree ornament is made, then it used to be that the inside was coated with mercury in order to make the Christmas tree ornament reflective like a mirror. But we all know that mercury is highly poisonous. And certainly we know that, you know, the Mad Hatters, people, milliners used to go insane because mercury was one of the chief ingredients used in setting felt. So then that was eventually replaced by silver. And of course, nowadays it's plastic or something. So this poem is out of that background. No chance now to remember more than incident light, glimpses through a basement window where torches hissed gas and glass glowed yellow and plastic, bulbed with the breath of people who didn't matter, only the beauty they drew from air and fire. Someone else, elsewhere, painted the ornaments with mercury, delivered them sparkling to our eyes so we could see more clearly how light transcends matter, and how this imperfect earth is a passage only. Whatever stars we might dream, mere pinpricks in the Empyrean. No chance for us or for them to redeem such antique innocence, the wonders we breathed or the vapors they did and that killed them. Too late now to put away childish things, our blood thick with the miracles of light, a mad residuum of flame we can't undo. Only remember the glass we saw cool on a basement bench, heat and color fading into a slow transparency, not humming spheres, but charred wood, dirt on the window, a smell of scorched sand. The dark solidity of the world seen through glass, everything visible, damned and blessed into light. Thank you.